This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. You're listening to Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. I am not the DF sniper. I'm Mike Alexander filling in for Sean tonight. He's feeling a little under the weather. Either that or he didn't want to have to pronounce half a dozen Eastern European names. So, yeah, we're talking about UFC St. Petersburg. It's a fight night card. With us, Chris and Joe, Sun Tzu. What's going on, Joe?
And we are down to 11 fights.
We are.
Quick note. Go ahead. Do the update.
Ivan Strykov is hospitalized. His fight with Devin Clark is canceled. If you've got either of those guys in your lineups, get them out. And good time to remind you, lock is at 10 a.m. or maybe a little bit thereafter with this cancellation, but don't play it too close. Make sure you check those first thing in the morning for any other weird middle of the night kind of things. And then Chris Olsen, what's going on, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I these are the kind of cards that are really interesting to me because for the one side of the coin is that it's kind of a pain to look up, you know, all the fighters, but the other side of that is that if you're good and diligent at research, you know, you can get an edge that other players might not have. So I kind of like them from that aspect. And, I'm ready to get it done. Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely some names. You know, got a lot of debuts, guys coming off of long layoffs that haven't fought in the UFC in a little while. Pretty interesting card. A quick thank you to our sponsor, RotoWire. If you want to get a free 10-day trial, you can go to rotowire.com/free. All the premium content, you get. Don't have to put down a credit card. And then also, quick note, if you're listening to the podcast, this is a replay of the live recording from YouTube on Friday night. Without further ado, let's start talking MMA. How did you guys make out last week with an all-time great card with those two title fights both going five rounds?
I personally felt very fortunate to grind out a small little profit, and that was predominantly due to cash, and I actually took down two small single-entry GPPs, you know, so that, and that's with having two losses, which is surprising because I had, I stacked the main. I don't know if that's actually a loss considering how many points those guys scored, but I stacked the main. And I had Gastelum, so I had two losses, and I still took down two GPPs and did okay in cash, actually. So I eked out a small profit. Chris?
Yeah, not my best night, if I'm being honest. We were talking to Mike before we went on. Far too much Jalen Turner. If you remember the podcast last week, that was a point of contention between me and Sean. Either Jalen Turner or Matt Frivola, and I would never say it to his face and give him the satisfaction, but since he's not here, I can say it looks like Sean was right, but I'm ready to move on and get a fresh start this week.
Nice. Yeah, he definitely got that one. I was on the right side of the main event and the other title fight, but like you, too much Turner. I did have one lineup with Roundtree and one lineup with Taha bail me out, though, so that was very nice.
Nice.
All right, getting into this card. First fight of the night, we've got Magomed Mustafayev taking on Rafael Fiziev. Mustafayev, 8,500, coming in at +115 at the moment. That line's been moving a lot. Fiziev is 7,700, -125 at the moment. This line flipped to Fiziev midweek. So what do you make of that, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, you always wonder when you see Russian fighters and you see a line flip. It almost makes you think that somebody might know something when you see money come in to flip a line. And that's one thing just generally on this card is people should pay attention right up until lineup lock, massive line moves. Because, you know, like I don't want to make too big a deal out of it. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist that says, oh, because it's in Russia, that means fights are going to be fixed. But, you know, information maybe doesn't flow as freely as it might in the West. So I would certainly pay attention to big line moves. And if you see money coming in very heavy, like case in point is the last Russia card, a ton of late money came in on Alexei Oleinik against Mark Hunt. And no one could figure out why. Well, obviously somebody knew something. You know, either Hunt was not feeling well or, you know, or something was going on. But obviously that late money that came in on Oleinik was right. So pay attention, especially on this card, to any late money causing line moves.
Agreed there. Chris, what's your take on this one?
I think that, you know, this prospect coming in is somebody I really like. I think he's got really good leg kicks. You know who he reminds me of? He sort of reminds me of a Marcin Prachnio, who's a lot better at defense. So I like him in that respect. He's got real good leg kicks, as I said. He's very explosive. He likes to dart in and out with strikes out of the pocket. He'll throw in combination a little bit, but usually limited to two or three punches. But, just an explosive guy who I think is defensively responsible, and I love that combination. Obviously, he's got some power. Mustafayev has been a couple years since we've seen him, since that loss to Kevin Lee. And, you know, what we learned in that fight is he is really susceptible to wrestlers. His opponent this time isn't much of a wrestler, although he's pretty good on the ground. He's got good top control. He floats on his opponent pretty well. I think that what's most interesting to me in this fight is both of these guys are going to try to overwhelm the other one. So it's going to be really interesting to see who gets that forward pressure off first. What I think is going to happen is I think that Mustafayev isn't quite as technical with his strikes or strike selection as his opponent is. And I think that's going to really be the difference here. I think he's going to get broken down. And I think this is going to be a stoppage one way or the other. I'm gonna go out and probably say submission. I think it gets to the ground in some way. And a sub happened. So I'm going to be looking heavily at this fight, and I'm going for the debutante.
Yeah, I'm with you there too, Chris. I mean, it makes you wonder, like, he loses to Kevin Lee and then takes 2.5 years off. Like, how does one support themselves when, you know, if they're a fighter and they don't fight for 2.5 years? So That tells me if you could afford to take 2.5 years off, you probably have an alternative career. And now you're coming back because they're looking for bodies for a fight here in Russia. Now, it does say Jackson Wink, but I don't think he did his camp at Jackson Wink for this fight. Where the other guy who I'm going with, the debutant, is Tiger Muay Thai, which is an acclaimed camp in Phuket, Thailand. I know it well. Been there many times. Not Tiger Muay Thai, but Phuket. I'm going to go with the debutante. I'm going to take advantage of the line flip. And obviously, this is one of the fights where there's really good line value on DraftKings. I expect him to be very highly owned at, 7.7K? I expect him to be very highly owned.
Yeah, that's my only concern here is, you know, the odds value. He's one of the few. He's a nice fit in any lineup, so he's going to be popular. And, being a Muay Thai practitioner, he's going to want to get off with volume against Mustafayev, who's got some kicks that can thump. So there's a little bit of concern there for going overweight on.
Oh, no, I'm with you. And if I was going to make I think this guy more than Martin Prachniow, this guy reminds me more of like a Tasmanov, you know, who's currently serving a USADA suspension, which is why we don't see him on this card. You know, he's very aggressive. I think his last two finishes have come from a body kick and a head kick, which is kind of fun to see. So, I'm on the dog, and there's the line value. He's going to be very highly owned, though. So.
Yeah, I'm there with you guys. So,
3-0.
Moving on to the next fight, you've got Mikhail Oleshchik, 8,800, taking on Gadzmirad Antigulov, 7,400. The line for Oleshchik, -215. Antigulov, the comeback, +195. Pretty clear narrative in this one. You've got grappler versus striker. If Mikhail can keep Antigulov at bay long enough to get his striking off, it's going to be a pretty easy win for him. But we haven't seen him have to defend a takedown yet. So, Chris, what do you think about Mikhail there? Can he defend a takedown?
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. I think, and this is just sort of from some deductive reasoning on my part, I think that he will be able to, just because I think his in and out movement and the way he keeps distance will be enough. I think Antigulov is he'll always be an interesting play from a DraftKings perspective, just based on how he fights, and especially when he's the dog, because he just likes to come in behind these wild strikes and tries to get takedowns, but when he can't get them, he gasses out, and that's pretty much the end of the fight. We saw that in the Kutalaba fight, where everybody expected him to get takedowns, and he couldn't. I actually like Oleshchik quite a bit as far as his fighting style. I love his body work, which is actually how he's...
Taking out Gian Vellante with a body shot, man, that was savage. You didn't even see it. You just heard it. That was nasty stuff.
And Vellante felt it, yeah. And I love, as I said, his in-and-out movement. I love the variety in his striking. You know, as you said, the great unknown. We've never seen him defend a takedown. And for that reason, I think maybe his ownership will be a little off here with him being the favorite. But I quite like him. I think that if he can't get a finish and he gets tired, Oleshchik will be there to get him. I think he'll be able to stop takedowns in any case. But I will say again that, you know, Antigulov is worth the DraftKings play just because, you know, look, takedowns are money. And if he gets you there, I mean, a sub is pretty likely. So I'm on the favorite here. I think it's high scoring one way or the other. So pick your favorite flavor, you know, whether it's grappler or a striker. And I think be heavily invested in this fight one way or the other.
Yeah, great fight to target. Joe, what kind of mix are you going to have with your heavy builds?
Yeah, so Antigulov has got one round of cardio, right? He's a pure GPP play. So he's worth a shot in multi-entry. I mean, 20 lineups, I mean, I would certainly have no more than one or two in 20 lineups, Antigulov. You know, if you're going to max the one, if you're going to max the dollar for 150, or if you have bankroll to max the 15 for 150, I would certainly say no more than, you know, 3 to 5% Antigulov. I'm with Chris. I do like the poll quite a bit here. I do think he will fend off the takedowns. You know, he's 24 years old. You know, he could have a future at 205. That was very impressive the way he finished Vellante. He was a bit of a meathead, but that's okay. You know, so I am, again, this is kind of boring. Again, we're both, Chris and I are both on the favorite.
Well, we can have a little bit of nuanced disagreement here, because I think you should go a little bit heavier on Antigulov than you think, just because I think that if he does get his takedown game going, it's his fight. And I think, to Mike's point, you know, we haven't seen him have to defend. So can he deal with that relentless kind of wrestling? We're going to have to see. And I think that, you know, it's worth a couple more shots to, I mean, 5% is pretty low. I think it's worth a little more than that to find out.
And you have to remember, you know, people thought Justin Willis was going to have takedown defense because he's a good athlete and he trains at a good camp. And we saw how that turned out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I think Oleshchik's just probably got too much power and is too good of a striker. Moving on to the next fight, I got Marcin Cibura, 8,400, taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov, 7,800. Tybura, -140. The comeback on Abdurakhimov is +130. This one, not that exciting of a fight. two big guys that don't really get to work. They're both going to kind of look at each other for half a round. I think Tybura is still the better fighter. Where do you land on this, Joe?
Yeah, so the best description of this fight was, I don't know if you guys listened to the Bloody Elbow Level Change podcast. You know, Crooklyn, Steffi Haynes, and Mookie Alexander, and I believe it's, is it Victor Rodriguez? Anyway, the way they describe this fight is two big, overly hairy, sweaty guys rubbing up against each other for three rounds. And that could possibly happen. I mean, you know, I think Tabora is, you know, slightly the better fighter. I mean, obviously my man Shamil, you know, proved again that Chase Sherman has no shin. And he just laid him flat. Although I expected him to win by takedowns, he actually lit him up standing. I think that fight might have been in China. Anyway, you know, so I'm not going to be targeting this fight too heavily. But since we're picking all these fights, I'm going to go with Tybura just because I think he's got more tools. But it's not an overly confident pick. And yeah, I guess I'm going to go with Tybura here. Unfortunately, I think I like three Polish fighters on this card. But yeah, I'll go with Tybura.
Yeah, I like that. To just build a nice lineup of all Poles.
Do a Polish lineup. Yep.
Yeah. And Shamil, you know, he is that kind of like sneaky fast for, you know, he doesn't look like a guy that's a great athlete, but he is pretty quick, and he's fairly accurate. And it seems like more people are on him. Are you getting that feeling too, Chris, that people are leaning Shamil's way?
I don't know, because every time I try to look up this fight, I fall asleep. So I look. No, I pretty much echo what you guys said. When I was looking at this fight, and I was like, okay, but what do I do with it on DraftKings? I think I'm fading it altogether. I mean, I'm gonna run it down anyway. Of course, Shamil is just sort of a guy who likes to throw big bombs and try to get his takedown game working. Even when he does get that takedown game working, he doesn't do much with it. I mean, as we saw in the Derek Lewis fight, in other fights as well. So even when he gets like three or four takedowns, he's not even a person who's going to score well pretty much no matter what price he is, unless he's down in the dumps, which he usually isn't. He's usually firm around that 8,000 mark. And, you know, as far as Tybura goes, he's sort of deceptively fast too. I think you could say that about both guys that are pretty athletic here. I'm going to go with Tybura as well, just because I think he's the better striker. He's actually got a kicking game, which Abdurakhimov doesn't. And, you know, he can hit his offensive takedowns too. It's not like Abdurakhimov can't be taken down. So, you know, I think – I think he's the more dedicated submission fighter. You know, against Derek Lewis, he was constantly looking for the back. He was transitioning. I mean, he didn't get much done, but he was looking for it. And I'd rather have an aggressive fighter than a not aggressive fighter, and that's pretty much Abdurakhimov. So, with all that being said, I'm taking Tybura. I do think this basically ends in a staring match. So I'm not going to have much, but the little I do have is going to be on Tybura.
It does worry me back in Tybura, you know, being that he's in Russia fighting a Russian, but like Joe mentioned. So if this goes to a decision, which we think is a possibility, that there could be some lean in one direction.
Yeah. But,
all right. The next fight, I think we may get some disagreement on. We've got Alex Da Silva, young guy, taking on Alexander Yakovlev. Da Silva, 7,900 plus 125. Yakovlev, 8,300 minus 135. The first thing you hear about both of these guys, Da Silva, that his record is padded as a Brazilian, and Yakovlev, that he is a decent rapper, but not so great of a fighter lately. Joe, what are you doing with this one?
Yeah, I'm going with Da Silva here. I mean, Yakovlev, another guy that I love his nickname, the Thunder of the North. Another guy that is coming off of a long layoff after a couple of losses, one of which was to Kamaru Usman. Get it. Don't know. I think he's on this card because it's a Russia card. Da Silva, look, I like his camp, Astra Fight Team, 20-1. You know, I don't know that it's that bad of a padded record. Like, the last guy he beat was 5-1. You know, prior to that, you know, Fernando Coleman was 7-4. So we're not seeing like 0-0-1. We're not seeing
those types. Yeah, he finally stepped it up lately.
Yeah, it's not like awful. 19-9, Daniel Swain, who's kind of
going abroad to fight people too. So
yeah, so a bit of a name there. I'm look, there I 7.9K on DraftKings. I just don't know what to make of Yakolev. I'm not going to have a lot of him, Yakolev, but I do like Da Silva, and I think he offers some line value. So I am on Leko at 7.9K.
Yeah, and you know, people think Yakolev is going to out-wrestle Da Silva. Watching Yakolev's last fight against Cummings, he just didn't look like he was interested in fighting and kind of ran around him. He's a very upright fighter. That doesn't make a good mix for a guy who could have some fairly lethal striking in Da Silva. Are you falling in row for the third fight in a row here, Chris?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to go ahead and make this boring again. I've heard that take too, that Yakolev is going to out wrestle Da Silva, and you know it is a concern. We've seen Da Silva is a guy who has bad takedown defense and sort of tries to make up for that by being really sort of opportunistic with his submission attempts. And to his credit, he's got a bunch of subs on his record. And I like guys that are active off their back. You know, I'd rather you be active off your back than, you know, sort of settle into position. I mean, mostly I'd rather you try to get up, but if you're not going to do that, I'd rather you go for a submission, I guess. I just don't think that Yakolev is that committed of a wrestler. He's not that committed of a striker, come to think of it.
Not that committed of a fighter.
Yeah, I mean, he's another one of these guys who basically just, you know, tries to look for his counter shot. He'll lead occasionally, but not that much. And, you know, could he come out here and really stick to a dedicated wrestling game? Sure. And for that reason, I think you should have some of him. But, I mean, this is a guy who's, it's been a while, but it's not been a while since he's been subbed totally, but a lot of his subs come earlier in his career. But they account for 4 of his 8 losses. 3 of them are arm bars. Arm bar is something that you go for when you're on your back. So, you know, I kind of like that aspect of it. And I just think, you know, in the striking, it's another universe. Da Silva's another guy who's got really good, really thunderous leg kicks. He can throw in combination a little bit. So overall, I like the dog here. The wrestling game of Yakolev does give me a little bit of concern, but overall, I think I have more faith that Da Silva is actually going to be an active fighter, and we need guys who are going to put up points, so I'm going Da Silva.
Yeah, that's a good point there, Chris. If Yakolev wins, unless it's a really heavily wrestling-based fight, he's not going to probably pay very well. Okay, moving on, we've got Sultan Aliyev, 8,000 even, taking on Kiata Nakamura, 8,200. Aliyev plus 100 at the moment, and Kataro minus 110. Another one of two guys it's tough to make heads and tails of this fight. So, Chris, go ahead and try.
I'm sorry, I got distracted here. Posted in chat is a Yakolev freestyle. So if you guys want to check that out, you can go for it here. I'm sorry. Were we talking about MMA?
Your take on Kataro Aliyev.
Yeah, sure. So unfortunately, this is another fight that's probably going to be a little bit of a snoozer. Probably because both of these guys are kind of counter fighters. To Nakamura's credit, he did come forward a lot more in his last fight. But generally what he tries to do is just back himself against the fence and use his kicking game. He's got power, of course. He's got subs on his record. I think the last one we saw though was Kyle Nope at the end of the second round, buzzer beater. So that's a long time ago now. And, you know, as far as Sultan Aliyev goes, he's another wrestler, grappler who, you know, doesn't wrestle frequently enough and doesn't really go for subs. So it's another one of these weird kind of fights. I guess I would go for Nakamura just because I trust him as the better striker. And I think he's a little bit more of a finisher. If it goes to the ground, I think he's probably going to have the advantage there. But again, this is another fight where, I'm kind of at a loss. And for these two prices, so close and both in the 8,000 range, this might be another one to skip. But as far as the pick goes, I'm going Nakamura.
We're running out of fights to roster. What do you got, Joe?
Wow. So first of all, Sultan Aliyev, give me a little latitude here. Think Luke Rockhold with out having the Western dentistry and couldn't find a body waxer. And that's Sultan Aliyev. So I don't know what to do with this fight, man. You know, Nakamura, I don't think he's ever scored more than 60 points in a win or something, you know, horrendous like that. Sultan Aliyev, losses to, you know, is coming off of, you know, a couple of losses. Granted, they were close. You know, he lost to Wally Alves. He had a split decision win over Serbian Steel. Lost to Kenny Roberson. Has been in the UFC for over four years and has only had three fights. I'm sorry, I find that amusing. 4 years, three fights. Again, another guy, I'm not sure how he's supporting his family. I am just going to give the slightest of leans to Aliyev for no other reason than he's local and he's fighting at home. These guys are both the same age. Obviously, Nakamura has got more experience, is better on the ground. I should probably pick him to win, but something tells me that, you know, this could be an ugly split decision win for Aliyev where he scores, you know, like 49 points like Dwight Grant did last week. I'm not gonna have a lot of exposure to this fight, very little as a matter of fact, but I will pick Sultan Aliyev.
Yeah, a lot of these guys' phones tend to ring only when the UFC comes to Russia.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'm going to go with Aliyev as well. I just don't see Nakamura being able to get to Aliyev's back easily because, you know, he kind of lets people take him down, you know, and he's got to work off of his back. And I agree, it's probably a bit of a lay and pray, but Aliyev at home, another decision that could lean his way. Next fight on the card, Movsar Evalev, 9,100, and Sungwoo Choi, 7,100. You've got minus 330 on Evalev and Choi at plus 300 on the comeback. Both of these guys have held regional belts recently. They're making their debuts. You've got Evalev, the wrestler, Choi, the striker. Who are you going to back in this one, Joe? Joe, did I lose you?
I think we lost Joe.
Oh, all right. Then we'll go to Chris.
All right. Winning by default is my favorite way to win. Yeah, I really like Evalev here. I think that, you know, I commented on Twitter earlier today. I get exhausted watching this guy fight. He's just a mismatch of takedowns and scrambles, and he doesn't seem to ever get tired. And, you know, that could really be DraftKings gold, especially with, you know, the rinse and repeat, you know, mat returns. Those all count as fives. So, you know, I'm all for it. He's a sub hunter, too. I like that about him. The opponent here is, you know, a better striker, but, you know, really clinches up and is way too accepting of the clinch for my liking. If he could keep his distance, I might like it a little better. You know, he's got good kicks. He's got length, but he doesn't really use it, as I said. And generally in a fight like this, my policy is if one guy is going to give the other guy the exact fight he wants, you should probably pick the guy who's going to get the fight he wants. And here I think it's Evalev who's going to, you know, stay connected pretty much the entire fight. And, pretty much imposes will, and you know, I like him for a big score to pay off that salary here.
Yeah, that seems to be the sentiment with most people. Evalev is going to get this fight where he wants it. He's going to control it. I don't think I can disagree there. It does concern me a little bit that, you know, both of these guys are debuting and we're leaning so hard to one of them. You know, it shouldn't surprise us if Choi comes out and shows some pretty good striking because he's got some thump, you know, and could definitely catch Evalev. And, you know, at 7,100, that would be on the winning lineup almost certainly.
So is this one of those fights for you where you're just going to go the dog to fade the field here for a leverage play? You think that's a good spot here?
It depends on how many you're building. You know, I think with 20 lineups, probably three or four is a smart bet. No more than that, just to be different. Because with this card, you know, like I said, we're down to 11 fights. We've got a lot of really kind of one-sided narratives. The crowd is going to be shoehorned into some very specific builds.
Yeah.
Just to go against it makes a lot of sense, even if it feels, you know, contrary to what your instinct is. And this is one of those spots. You know, you can see a narrative for Choi. Not that it's a great one, but it may pay off to have a few lineups with him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, I think you make great points about the fact that we lose a fight here, and especially the fact that, you know, as we said in the beginning, a lot of people aren't really going to know a ton about a lot of the fighters on this card. So I think they're more apt to go with, like, you know, the prevailing narrative than, you know, if they know a lot of the fighters, maybe they're more comfortable stepping out. But in a card like this, maybe they'll try to stay home more. So I think you're right. In a card like on a card like this, I think, you know, playing those dogs, especially when we don't know a whole lot about either of them, I think it could really be a slate breaker if it comes in.
For sure. So yeah, I guess we'll just soldier on without Joe here.
Yeah, I thought when he dropped out, he might have he might be on his way back, but you know, we'll make do. Let's get it going. We'll
keep our fingers crossed. See if we can get him reconnected.
Yeah.
But coming up to it, I'm really excited about this next fight. You've got Krzysztof Jatko, 8,600, taking on Alan Amadovsky, 7,600. Jatko, -175. And
there you go.
Amadovsky, I'm back. I don't know what happened. Everything froze up.
Ah, we got Joe back. Just in time. You can give us your Evalev Choi take before we move on.
Evalev. Brett Apley, my good friend, is... he is as high on this fighter debuting as any prospects. He's big on Evalev, which is enough for me. I would have liked him anyway, but I am I'm going to be pretty heavy on him for this fight.
Yeah, I'm there with you. But I was saying to Chris, you know, on a card that's this, you know, there's very specific narratives. We're kind of getting. Going to have a lot of similar builds. It makes sense to me, at least, to fit in some Choi, even though.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think Choi's going to win, but he's a striker who is getting a guy that is taking a step up in competition as well. That's interesting.
Yep.
All right, but yeah, so we were transitioning to Amadovsky Jatko. Quick recap: Jatko 8,600, Amadovsky 7,600. Joe, since we've got you back, lead us off with Jatko Amadovsky.
So Amadovsky may be one of the lower level debuting fighters here. You know, fighting out of, I guess he's got a couple of fights in Bellator where he did okay. You know, Jatko was elite, prior to his recent skid, he was top 15, 185. Got lit up by Brad Tavares, lost prior to that, you know, look, to Uriah Hall and a split decision to David Branch. So he kind of fell off the rails. I like that he took some time off, took a year off, is back now.
Do you think that's going to help his chin, Joe? Because when Tavares tagged him in the third of that fight, he just went right into the fetal position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he was getting really hurt by Tavares. That fight, by the way, got Tavares a new contract. I think taking the year off is, I think sometimes you get these guys that get lit up and they don't take enough time off. You know, so I like that he took some time off here. You know, it's interesting, you know, he's not training at a horrible camp. I mean, the camp that he's trained at is owned by Peter Sobota. UFC fighter with a decent record, 17-6. I am going to give Jatko another chance here. With that said, I don't know how this fight is going to score. Although, with only 11 fights on the card, you can't fade too many fights. So if I had to take a stand on Jatko or Marcin Tybura, I would rather be with Jatko because I think Jatko has got multiple ways to win the fight. And Jatko at least has shown his ability, you know, to put up a few points in the past. So I'm going to go with Jatko here. I'm going to give him another try.
Chris, there's a narrative out there that Jatko is going to wrestle his way to a victory. Do you see that happening at all?
I think he's certainly capable of it. He's certainly a good enough grappler. We've seen him wrestle before. And we've seen him look for the back before. And look, the opponent here is very susceptible to takedowns, and a willing but not really a great scrambler. And even when he gets his own takedowns, he's got he has trouble holding position. So I think that's a big point in Jacko's favor. I also think, like, if you watch his Bellator fights, he basically just likes to throw big shots and hope he connects with you. In the Bellator, fights, you know, it worked. And you know, if I could offer, you know, because I'm picking all favorites here, which I hate doing. I don't know what's become of me, but if I could offer a little bit of a hot take to mix things up, I guess I'm not 100% convinced that Jacko's chin is bad. I think that the Tavares fight, he just sort of got caught with an awkward strike against the fence. I think you could also make an argument that there was a little bit of a slip involved there. He didn't look out or anything when he covered up before the final barrage came. And look, Uriah Hall is just a one-punch monster. In his next fight, he pretty much did the same thing where he was losing the whole fight and then landed one strike and put the guy out cold. So I'm not 100% convinced that Jacko's chin is bad. I actually think he's pretty good defensively generally, those two strikes he got caught with notwithstanding. But I have to say, if I'm wrong about that and Jacko's chin is bad, as I said, the opponent here is going to try to throw big bombs and get him out of there. So if you're looking for a dog, and you have to be in these spots on this card where they might be sparse, this might not be a terrible play. But ultimately, what do I think is going to happen? I think Jacko wrestles him down and eventually gets a submission. So personally, I'm going to be pretty heavy on Jacko, but I can see the rationale for the opponent.
It's certainly a possibility. For me, this is a hill I'm going to take a stand on and actually play Amadovsky. Jacko, watching his last three fights, he seems a little bit tentative. He isn't hurting people. You know, I mean, he did hurt Uriah Hall, but that he couldn't finish Uriah Hall was just, He had 3+ minutes to get a finish. He was on top. He was mounted. He had the back. He had him against the fence and was throwing everything he had, and he just couldn't get him to go away. So that just worries me. And I think Amadovsky's just going to walk forward here. So if Jacko can't hurt him, it's going to be trouble. This is my one spot to take a stand and go against the crowd.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think it's a terrible one. And I think you're going to get some scarcity out of it, certainly. So if you're right, I think that, that it could pay, but I see the wrestling being a big factor here, and I just can't get that out of my mind. So that's my biggest reason.
Gotcha. All right, we've got a ladies fight next up on the card. Roxanne Modafferi, 6,900, taking on Antonina Shevchenko, sister of Valentina, 9,300. Modafferi +255, Shevchenko -280. This is an interesting one. Modafferi just tends to walk forward and throw and sloppily look for takedowns. She can get hit. Shevchenko, a fairly tight striker, so there should be a little bit of volume there for her. What's your read on this fight, Joe, since you are the expert in the latest?
So, look, first of all, if anybody does not think that this is the hotter of the Shevchenko sisters, you need to see an eye doctor, get some eye drops, new glasses, whatever. By far, she is the hotter of the sisters. So getting that out of the way, right? Modafferi is probably going to be a very popular punt, especially in cash at 6.9K. I could certainly see her presenting a problem for Shevchenko if the fight goes to the ground. I do not think Antonia is as accomplished on the ground as her sister, who has really shown some chops on the ground recently. So I think she could make the fight interesting. Now, striking, I would give the edge to Antonia for sure, right? But I don't see her getting the finish. I certainly would not bet her at over 3-1. At 9.3K on DraftKings, absent a finish, I don't know how many points we're going to get, because I don't see Antonia taking it down. I don't see her getting any grappling points, advances, reversals. So I don't like her a lot in this spot for DraftKings. Will she probably win? Yes. I guess I'm going to have to pick her to win, but I will have more shares of the Happy Warrior on on DraftKings than I will of Shashanko.
Yeah, Roxy Modafferi does not look like a fighter, but man, she gets after it. So yeah. That's one thing.
She only got finished, I think, twice in her career, and once was a body slam by Sarah Kaufman, which like anyone would have gotten finished to that. So I could see her gritting it out. And look, would it be uncharacteristic, or would anybody be overly surprised if she caught Shevchenko in something on the ground and subbed her? I mean, I could see it happening. So she's going to be a punt. I think she'll be pretty popular as a punt, but Shevchenko for the win.
Yeah, that's going to make Cash even more similar,
right,
among people, because she is going to be a popular punt for somebody that can give you a little bit of volume. Chris, where are you falling on this one?
Yeah, this is interesting for me. Well, for all the reasons you guys said, another thing that I see here is that we've seen Antonina be really accepting of the clinch because she likes to work her plum clinch. And I think that getting Roxy connected to her is probably going to be the worst thing that she can do. She's gonna invite some of those takedowns. Now, I think it's interesting that, and I think you guys are right when you say that Roxy is gonna be highly owned at that price. Now, that could actually lend some scarcity in the other direction, if you wanted to pay up. And if you wanted to pay up, you know, I see some merit in it. You know, I get that Roxy's really tough; she doesn't really get finished, but I also get that she's just going to sort of wade into the pocket with, you know, strikes that don't hurt anybody. And that's her major problem on the feet, is even when she's having success, she can't hurt you. And so the opponent comes back with something much harder. And that was basically the story of her fight with Sajara Eubanks. But I can see the arguments from both sides. I could see Antonina getting too attached to her clinch work and getting taken down, and that could obviously yield some points. But I could also see Roxy standing too much, as she tends to like to do. She tends to like to work her striking, even though, you know, it's not really what she should be focused on. And, you know, that's the danger zone, especially if she's going to be out in kicking range. I mean, yeah, she doesn't get finished a lot, but she also doesn't get head kicked by what Antonia could do to her a lot either. So I think that a finish from either isn't out of the question here, which makes this a pretty live fight on both sides. I agree with having Roxy as the punt, but I also agree she's going to be popular. So if you want to do like a contrarian pay up, I think this is a decent spot for it.
Agreed there. Yeah, it's, you know, 9,300 is a pretty big pill to swallow on this card with there's not too many dogs that are down at like the 7-7-1 range that are easy to swallow. I'll take Shevchenko, and as Dan Levy mentioned on his pod, she's not on this card to take an L. She's here for a W. So next fight was the canceled fight between Shturkov and Clark. So we're moving on to Sergey Pavlovich, 9,200, taking on Marcelo Gome, 7K even. Pavlovich -240, Gome +220. Both of these guys coming off of losses. Gome is fighting for his UFC life. He has not looked very good inside the octagon. Pavlovich was an up-and-comer, but made a debut against Overeem, which is a weird guy to debut against, and just got his butt handed to him. Chris, who are you backing out of our second heavyweight fight of the card?
Marcelo Gome as a prospect coming up. You know, he destroyed Joaquin Christensen, but, you know, most people do. So,
Christian Colombo.
Oh, Christian Colombo. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Joaquin Christensen, somebody else. But I think that, you know, he's really been done a disservice, or his style has, by his last two fights, which were Arjun Buller and Tim Johnson, before he skipped over to Bellator, because those are guys that are grinders up against the fence, wrestlers. Johnson in particular is a grinder up against the fence. Arjun Buller is more of a takedown guy, but either way, it was tough for going to get his own striking and wrestling game working. We know he's got a good BJJ top game, and you know, I sort of like his striking. He can work behind a jab a little bit. He's got really nice leg kicks. He can throw in combinations. So I think he's a pretty put together striker, and I think he's got a pretty good BJJ game. And you know, as we say, we're looking for dogs, and you know, at this price, I really think, like I commented when we were doing the preview for the opponent debut here against Overeem, that and I think it still stands. I think we saw a lot of it in that fight where he basically just tries to pressure, plant, and throw big shots until you fall down. But I do think he's going to be more susceptible to wrestling than, you know, Gomes' last two opponents. And I like that about it here. I do think the pressure might be able to get to him, but I don't think he's going to be able to, like, wall and stall and impose his will as readily as those guys. So I like Gomes here as sort of a dog if we're looking for him. I think he's got a nice skill set overall. He's toolsy, as I like to say, taking from the baseball parlance there. And, you know, I just think he's a good shot here, especially we just saw what Overeem did to him when he was on his back. So, you know, all things considered, I think 7,000 is a good price, and I'm taking a few shots on Gomes here.
It's hard to dislike any heavyweight at 7K. Joe, we've got another Brazilian coming to Russia. Is he here just to get the Russian back in the win column?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't disagree more with Chris. I mean, first of all, Pavlovich did not debut against Alistair Overeem. He debuted against Alistair Overeem as a -130 favorite. There has been a sizable investment made by the UFC in this guy. He was 20-0 coming into that fight, master of Sambo. I have to believe they're serving up Gomes here on a silver platter to get Pavlovich back into the win column here.
They could be, but that doesn't always work out.
No, I get it. I understand that. You know, I've seen stranger matchmaking. But I have to believe that this is Pavlovich's fight to win. As with most heavyweight fights, it's probably a good fight to target. You know, I will have shares of both guys, but if you're asking me to pick a winner, I'm going to pick Pavlovich.
How heavy on Pavlovich will you be, Joe?
He's not going to be one of my top tier favorite guys. I mean, there are other people I like at his price point. Well, again, you know, there's not much room to maneuver now with only 11 fights. So he's not going to be one of my primary guys, but I do like him. I mean, again, I'm bad at ownership. So, like, what do you think ownership's going to be on Pavlovich?
30%?
Okay, I was going to say 30%.
Oh, wow, really? See, I don't see it that high.
See, I will be at that or under. Yeah. I certainly won't be over.
Yeah, I mean, my concern with Pavlovich is when he got in there with Overeem and he couldn't just bully his opponent, he looked confused and didn't know where to go. Gomes is definitely not Overeem. He may not present quite the challenge. But I do have some concern for a guy that kind of, you know, has probably come up and been the better fighter every single time he's gotten into the cage. But,
I said this during the last review, too. Some of these M1 global guys that come in here with these 18-1, 19-0 records, I don't really like the looks of them. I mean, this guy looks all right, but like you said, it looks like he's basically bullied everyone he's ever fought. Guys like Alexei Konchenko, who came in here, I believe 18-0, hasn't looked that great. So I question sort of the caliber of their unbeatable fighters. I think when they get here, they tend to look a lot more human, and I'm kind of expecting that here as well.
All right, we're on to the co-main. Islam Makhachev, 9,400, taking on Armen Tsarukyan, 6,800. Makhachev -290, Tsarukyan +260. Joe, explain to me why Tsarukyan is debuting in a co-main against Islam Makhachev.
It's really weird. Unless, obviously there's some narrative around Islam Makhachev. I mean, I don't know if he could get a visa now to fight in the U.S., you know, which is going to be interesting. He's going to fight once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Khabib's right-hand man cooks all his meals. You know, I don't get it. I mean, I don't know why. I've heard very, very good things about, you know, his opponent against, you know, why they're throwing this guy up against Makhachev. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it seems like they're trying to get Makhachev a win. This is another one that could backfire because this guy is actually pretty good. I think it's worth right, having
like if they a share. Trying to get Makhachev a win. There's better fighters to do it against.
I guess, but I mean, you know, like putting him on a co-main, throwing him up against someone fairly acclaimed, but who he's just a little bit better at everywhere. Like he's a better grappler, he's a better wrestler, he's a better striker, but like not by a lot, you know. Which is look, I would like to see this. Obviously, his opponent debut against somebody else. I guess they just didn't want to feed him a total fish. But it's interesting. I like Makhachev. I mean, he's been really good on DraftKings, I have to say. I mean, you know, if you look at his point totals, let me just
all the one under 100.
Yeah, let's just exactly. I mean, I was just gonna pull him up. I mean, you know, look at his last three fights: 105, 102, 113. God, only 87 against Chris Wade. Of course, he lost to Adrian Martins. He only got 2 points. But he got 110 against Kuntz. So, I mean, you know, this guy is really got quite the average, you know. Going to be popular in cash, going to be popular in GPPs. I'd say, you know, look, if you want to take a flyer on Taz, I don't even want to try to pronounce
it. Sound it out.
You got it. If you want to take a flyer on him and GPPs, you know, why not? I certainly would not, you know, touch it in cash. One other thing to note is I believe, let me just double check this real quick. I believe he is fighting out of Armenia, I think, where obviously Islam Makhachev is a, you know, is definitely a Dagestani product. You know, there are definitely differences for those people that don't realize, you know, Russia is made up of many, or the former Soviet Union was made up of many different countries, you know, so it's like to say these guys are both Russian is not exactly right. 13-1. Yeah, I'm going to take a flyer with him in GPPs. I wouldn't play him in cash, but I got to like Makhachev here.
There were some really interesting large money bets coming down on Tsarukyan earlier this week.
It's a little worrisome.
Which is, you know, it's just this whole thing is fishy to me. Debuting in the co-main, weird betting. I might just write the whole thing off, being that Makhachev's expensive, but he should win. Where are you at, Chris?
Well, now that you've forced me to get my tinfoil hat on for 6,800, I don't know. But, I mean, my problem with Tsarukyan is he's one of these dudes that every part of his offense is like spinning back kick, spinning back fist. It's all like switch kick. It's all these big explosive movements, and you know, I don't like a guy who I don't consider to have a consistent offensive game, and I don't really think he does. I think he's a guy who kind of just hits the shot and says, "Look what I found on the feet." But having said that, he is kind of a power wrestler. That's interesting. Having said that, Islam Makhachev, I believe, has never been taken down in the UFC. So there is that to consider. And Islam Makhachev in most of the fights he wins, I mean, Joe, you were reading out some of those scores, but some of them are he either lost because he got knocked out or he knocked somebody out so he didn't have to take them down. And then there was the fight with Gleison Tibau, who, you know, nobody takes down. But I think Makhachev is probably going to be able to out-physical him. That's just a guess, seeing the two guys fight. But I think I'm probably correct. I think that Makhachev is going to be able to work his pressure game really well here. I think he's going to be able to back the opponent up. And I think he's going to be able to get his takedown game going, which could, you know, which could lead to points. As I said, he's got a lot of fights in there with multiple takedowns. You know, the power wrestling on the other side is interesting for 6,800. Maybe he'll be the first guy to take Makhachev down. I mean, aside from Nick Lenz, nobody's really tried. And Nick Lenz, I mean, he's a willing wrestler, but I wouldn't call him you know, a great one for MMA purposes. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, for 6,800, I could definitely see the play. I mean, he could either catch him with something wild, or, you know, he could just run some double legs through him. But otherwise, I think Makhachev has to be the safety valve here. The upside might be a little, you know, scarce, but I do think he'll win the fight.
Does it make any sense to either of you guys with Sarukian, you know, $100 less than Roxy Mataferi for your cash punt?
Not really.
No volume.
That's a good point, but I actually think Mataferi has a clearer path to victory here. I don't know that she does win, but I can see that a lot more readily, where you have, you know, like a new fighter, basically new to MMA, against a tough out who's gonna be in her face the whole time, looking for takedowns. Like Sarukian could do certain things, but I don't think they're so likely. So, you know, I think I'd still like Roxy out of the two of them.
All right, on to the main event. Alistair Overeem, 8,900. Alexei Olenek, 7,300. Minus 235 on Overeem. The comeback on Olenek, plus 215. Olenek stepping in here for Volkov on a little bit of notice. Chris, who are you taking in our third heavyweight fight of the card?
Well, Mike, I mean, I don't know how intently or ardently you listen to the show, but if you have caught it when we do Alexei Olenek fights, you will know that Alexei Olenek is one of my favorite fighters in the UFC. So if you're expecting me to pick against him, you're gonna be disappointed. I think I will not be picking against him here. Actually, I did pick against him for Curtis Blaydes. So sometimes it's so overwhelming that you know, the rationality just has to take over. But in this case, I think you can actually make a decent case for Olenek. I think that, look, I've said this before about Overeem. There aren't a lot of fighters. Like I tend to think that the bad chin moniker that a lot of fighters get are overblown. I actually don't think as many fighters have bad chins as a lot of people.
Everybody has a bad chin against Ngannou.
Well, that's true. Yeah, of course. And that's my other favorite thing, when somebody like Corey Anderson took that head kick from OSP, and they were like, "See the chin," and it's like, dude, who wouldn't get knocked out by that? But so there are definitely those guys who, you know, chins don't matter. But I say that to say that Overeem is actually one of the few guys in the division, or in the UFC, I should say, whose chin I am worried about. And I would actually say he fights like he has a bad chin. And what I mean by that is that you can tell he's very, these days, he's very worried about getting hit. And every time he does get hit, I kind of cringe a little bit, because it doesn't look like he takes that damage well. Now, in his last fight that we were just talking about, he actually came forward a little bit more than we'd seen in recent fights, which surprised me and is interesting. I mean, if he comes forward against Olenek, I think you said it before, Mike, that Olenek is hittable. There's no denying that. But, you know, Olenek is a wrestler who's going to try to take him down. And that being the case, we could see the style that Overeem used a few fights before that in a row, which was, you know, hands down, sort of stalking and looking to land big shots from the outside. And if he does that, I think that Olenek is going to have a pretty decent window to get in there and look for his takedowns. Against Curtis Blaydes, he had basically just relegated himself to landing knees on the way in, which could be great if they work, but if not, you've basically just given up a takedown. And I think that he actually hit Curtis Blaydes with one of those knees and still couldn't finish him, which is either a testament to Blaydes' chin or Overeem's power at this point, or both. But I think that a guy like Olenek, I actually think he's made some subtle striking improvements since he first came in, which is not something you usually say about like a mid-30s, early 40s heavyweight. But, you know, I like his work in the clinch. He does a lot of body work in the clinch, which I really like. He's got a deceptively long reach for how tall he is. I think he's got an 80-inch reach. So he clips a lot of guys with those winging hooks that maybe they wouldn't expect. And he's got some power. And, you know, if he touches the Overeem chin with one, I think it's going to blow up like a Ford Pinto. So I for that reason, I like Olenek. I also like the takedown upside. I know that Overeem could hit him with something and change the course of the fight, of course. But we also know how tough Olenek is. He took that huge overhand right from Mark Hunt and then gave him a thumbs up, which was one of my favorite moments of the year. So, yeah, I'm going to take Olenek here. Full disclosure, I'm a huge homer for the guy, and I won't ever deny that. But I also think there's some decent windows here. I think there are some things that you have to be worried about with Overeem, and I think that Olenek can exploit them. So Olenek is the pick.
Wow.
And Joe, where are you falling on this one?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize that Pintos had a spontaneous combustion problem. So I
never heard about that? Like in the 70s.
I appreciate Chris pointing that out. I love Olenek as well. It's, when he wins, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, the fact that he's finished two guys from the bottom, either is indicative of his strength or the piss poor fight IQ of Pesta and Baby Albini. Mark Hunt is notoriously bad at defending takedowns. Overeem is much better at defending takedowns. I'd like to think that, Overeem will be able to keep him at distance, pound away. Like, there's no way this fight is going five rounds, which is one thing that I'm, quite certain of. On this entire card, if you said, give me your most likely outcome, and my most likely outcome is that this fight doesn't go five rounds.
Olenek doesn't have that tank.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pick Overeem here.
Yeah, I mean, look, Olenek does have a bear trap. You don't rack up Ezekiel chokes in the UFC without it. But he's just so easy to hit is why I can't pick him here. Overeem is generally patient, sometimes to a fault, but Olenek, I don't think, has the striking to really get him in danger. Sure, he could connect. He does wing shots, and he just keeps coming. You hurt him, and you hurt him, and he keeps coming. But every time we've seen him, Olenek, that is, he gets hurt a little bit faster, and he's a little bit slower after taking some punishment. He's getting bloodied up right away. There's so much scar tissue on the face at this point. That sometimes plays with the judges. I don't think it'll get to a decision. I'm there with you, Joe, but it's nice to have that in your back pocket. I'll take Overeem as well. And I like him at 8,900. I think that's a nice price.
Doubters everywhere. Oh, well, we'll prove you wrong.
It would be fun to see, the one thing about Overeem, he's got decent jiu-jitsu, but he seems like a guy who's learned one or two moves. Like, he'll grab a leg, he'll lock in a heel hook and use it for a sweep. But when he did that against Blades, Blades just kind of, rode him and stayed balanced. And then Overeem didn't have a second move. It was just, okay, why didn't I get up? This guy's still
up. Well, early, I think it was in Strikeforce, or it was either Strikeforce or Pride, where he got that string of guillotines and everybody, that was like the myth for a while. Always, maybe not the myth, but that was the narrative. He's got a great guillotine. And then he tried one on Curtis Blades, and then Blades just popped his head right out.
Yeah,
and the one against Stipe doesn't work. I think I felt the tap against that didn't work either. So it's like, well, just how good, have those skills completely eroded, or have people gotten better, or, what's really going on there? So, if it gets to the ground, I think we could at least agree. I hope that it's probably a Linux fight.
Yeah, Reem is in trouble if there's not under 30 seconds left and that fight gets to the ground.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Blades did against Overeem was, he just kept coming and he kept working, and Overeem, through the second round really started to tire. And that's when it got to the ground. In the third round, he didn't have the tank to defend, and Blades cut him up. Not that I think Olenek's going to do that, but it should be a pretty good heavyweight bout, a nice main event here. You guys ready to do some hot takes?
Yeah, I'll give you my hot take. I've been thinking about this for a while, and it's not without some risk, but I'm going to play Roxanne Modafari by submission.
All right, I can dig that.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna go. Two submissions on this card. I think that Joe kind of, I won't say he took the easy route, but I think that a lot of people are sort of banking on Modafari for that, but we won't rake him over the coals too much. However, my submission pick, I think, is a little bit harder because I'm going Marcelo Gomes by submission.
Wow. Okay.
That would be a shocker.
Yeah, well.
For my submission, huh? Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say, I like him hot, so there you go.
Yeah. My submission hot take would be Alex Da Silva by submission.
Oh, there you go. After. Yeah.
I like it. I like it.
And then I'll throw one more at you. Amadovsky wins by knockout in the first minute.
Well, if it does happen, I think that's how it's going to go. So.
it's either that or he's toast.
Right, yeah.
Awesome.
I'm disappointed in you, Chad. I don't see any. Come on, somebody throw one up there. Let's
where's
go.
Where's John Church? Man?
I know.
Where's Automatic?
Our regulars are lagging behind. Yeah. No, give me something. Come on. I know you're here. We're going to vamp for these guys. 10. I'm going to count to 3. Hot take, at least one fighter gets banned for fixing by the end of the year. That's a rolling hot take. We could keep that. Yeah. We could keep that in the memory bank for you if you want.
Yeah, not in Russia. Yeah, well, they're not getting caught in Russia.
No, that's exactly right. All right, guys, we're gonna close them down. That's going once, going twice. All right, you missed your chance.
Oh, next week, Brazil, baby.
Got Vince saying somebody gets popped for PEDs.
Well, the guy who was most likely for that just got taken off the card. So,
yeah, I think somebody had commented that he saw USADA at the weigh-ins and got sick.
Yeah, I remember.
That's a good one. I like it. I like it.
Yeah, he's a Hulk of a man, huh? Hence the nickname. But yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Thanks to Sean for letting me sit in his chair. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks to RotoWire, awesome. The sponsor of the podcast. You guys have any closing thoughts?
No, I just want to say, Mike, thanks so much for doing this. We got you on crazy short notice, and my directions were a little bit jumbled at times, but you followed through perfectly. You did a great job, and thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, ditto from me, Mike. Nice to meet you. You know, we'll do this again sometime. You know, it seems like Sean has these maladies a lot, so I'm just giving you a hard time, Sean. You know, in any case, let's be careful with this card. We're down to 11 fights. There is still money to be made. Bet with your head and not over it.
I just got to say, VB says Nakamura by sub. So we did get a hot take in there. There you go.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah,
I'd say that's fairly hot because I don't think he's got a great shot at it.
Well, I mean, when was the last sub? I think was 3 years ago. And before that, who knows? So
yep,
we'll take it.
All right, guys, good luck this weekend. Remember, the lock is at 10 a.m. tomorrow. It's very early.
And going to start working on finishing my lineups up now.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, Chris, play us out.
All right, guys, that's going to be it for us. Tune in next week and every week. We appreciate it. Hit the like button. Subscribe to the RotoWire channel if you haven't already. And I'll be up nice and early with a cup of coffee for the fights.
Eben, Gleben, Globin, Globin.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.